This episode of Butcher's Breakaway is brought to you by you, the listener. Go to patreon.com/Butcher's Breakaway right now and support the show. Get your BSBOT every single week, which used to be on the main feed, but now is on patreon.com. We have a wonderful show for you today. We talk about the playoffs a little bit. We'll have the Rangers would fare. We have John Scott coming on, former NHL All-Star. He talks with us for a couple minutes about Secret Sather stories, his time in the Rangers, and also what he thinks the Rangers will do this offseason. Come back, answer some questions. Super fun show. Always love your feedback. Please support us if you have the means and you love us. Here we go. Let's get to Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Butcher Breakaway fans, welcome to the week of Butcher Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead of patreon.com/Butcher Breakaway, and I'm here with my other co-host, Gregory Kaplan, also a Butcher Breakaway Patreon, whatever. Greg, say hello.
You say one fucking word, I slap you in the face.
Oh, about the weekend?
Slay one fucking word!
Rangers, number one Ranger podcast.
Good man, good man.
I'll do the right thing. I'll be the bigger man. Boy, oh boy. The playoffs happened for 24 hours. We had three overtime games. Probably should get this out of the way now, right?
First thing, we should talk about Flames Canucks first, right?
Okay, because that was the game of the day. 5-4. You have to be honest. Like, it was a nice dessert after watching all the... What are they doing? What are the sky...
What are
like, I know...
doing?
I know
it's not that... It's just... That's the thing. It's just... It doesn't have to be this hard with the NHL. Hold on.
Yeah.
Can't tell if that's a sock fuzz or an insect. I'm going to kill it.
Okay.
Just in case. keep going. Okay. This is a great podcast.
Keep this part in, is what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So it doesn't have to be this hard, like killing a sock fuzz or an insect, but the NHL somehow...
I think sock fuzz, but I had to be sure.
Okay, so the NHL doesn't.
Are you saying you don't scream when you kill a bug?
You know what's funny, and I'm gonna get some crap for this. I think I don't kill bugs. I bring them outside.
Oh my god.
I'm a big bring bug outside guy.
God. You know what? It's people like you that makes me hope the bees all die.
Wow, I like my bees. I have a bee that lives on my back porch. His name's Beefy Bartholomew. He comes and pollinates all my flowers. We're big friends.
Oh god.
Anyway. The NHL
stupid. What has the NHL done today to prove to us that they're a smart organization?
Very little.
About their own product.
Very little. We'll have John Scott on today, who is an NHL All-Star, I think much to their chagrin at some point. And he'll talk about a lot of this too, so that'll be fun. We'll talk about a lot of the player safety enforcement and ask a person who was an enforcer. I think that's the best source of how to figure this all out or make sense of what exactly is going on in the NHL when it comes to punishing players. Because I simply don't understand. And I'm hoping he can enlighten me. But yes, we had three playoff games to start the weekend. It was tremendous hockey. The battle for Florida game one was one of the best games I've ever watched. Except that Tampa won. So that kind of took the wind out of my sails a little bit. But I have to. My initial takeaway from all this, Greg, is that I don't think this Ranger team would have gone very far in this playoff series.
Yeah, no. In this against anybody, right?
Yeah, every team I watched, I was like, oh, wow. The one thing I keep thinking about is that if the Rangers did make it, all of these games were close. All of these games were tight and had a strong like finish, and it was just to the end. And I feel like, wow, the Rangers probably would have lost 3-1 or 4-1. And it would have been mostly non-competitive.
I think the Rangers may have... Oh, it's tough. I don't even know because the Panthers looked so good against the Lightning, and it's not like the Rangers. The Rangers would thrive in a chaotic game like that, though, is what I'm trying to get at. My fear is if you were to put the Rangers up against the Panthers and it was just chaos for 60 straight minutes, I don't think the Rangers are allowing only 4 goals, which is the problem. The Rangers weren't done, which is crazy that we're talking about a team which now it's win or bust because James Dolan apparently didn't like what he saw in the year of our Lord 2021.
There's so much more than that. You know it. We talked about it extensively.
Yeah, I know. I know. We don't need to read that shit anymore. But,
hey, James Dillon came out today and said, I'm here to mend the wounds of New York. The Knicks are in the playoffs. We're here now. I've heard it for 20 years. And everyone clapped, yeah. I think.
If I told you that I won one of only three of the bets I made on playoff games this weekend, you'd be surprised to learn I bet on the Islanders, didn't you?
No, I don't. I actually like this Islanders team. And I think you and I have talked about it.
I can't hate the Islanders. I don't know if it's just
I hate
little
them.
Brother syndrome. I don't hate them. Like I can't bring myself to hate them.
Here's a question I asked myself over the weekend, and this really bothered me. It was, I can name a player on the other East teams I simply don't like or I have great disdain for. So Sidney Crosby, I have great disdain for, as we've discussed him many, many times on this podcast. His greatness cannot be denied, etc. Tom Wilson, I have an incredible disdain for. Probably sheer hatred. Brad Marchand, my God, I do not like that man. I would love him if he was on my team.
That's the thing. Brad Marchand still just makes me laugh more than anything.
No,
else.
I don't like him. He really, like, he's a really good rival. But when I look at the Islanders and I'm watching, I'm like, man, I really don't hate anybody here. Who do I hate? Like J.G. Pageau? But he was just Wayne Gretzky for a series. Like, I don't really hate anyone.
The Rangers. He's the J.G. Pageau, just the Manuel Margot of hockey. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there you go. You brought it up, not me.
I know. Well, it's just incredible how that guy, I don't understand how random people get ownership of certain teams. And I could talk about this with just Pageau if we want to, but it's just like such a bit player. You look at his career numbers, he's forgettable. He's going to retire and everyone will be like, oh, yeah, what that happened guy. To him? Except Met fans will be like, is he in the Hall of Fame yet? What the fuck? So it's incredible. That dude just ownership. I have no choice but to bend over and call him my daddy. To quote the great Pedro Martinez. Like, it's just unbelievable. But, yeah, I don't know. Who am I supposed to hate? I don't really care for Ross Johnston, but I'm not about to – or Matt Martin, I guess, for that extent. But, like – I'm beyond the point of having to form opinions.
Probably a Ranger fan, Matt Martin, just saying.
Yeah, and I'm just beyond the point of having to form opinions about fourth-line plebs that, you know, don't really matter in the long scheme of things. Like, we both love Barzal.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone not on the New York Rangers who has a higher Q rating from the Blue Shirt Breakaway Boys than Matt Barzal.
He's up there.
I like – Jordan Eberle doesn't elicit a reaction from me. Brock Nelson – something about the name grinds my gears, but him as a player, no. Anthony Beauvillier, I would fucking love on the New York Rangers. That guy, if not Barzal, Beauvillier is like right there in terms of guys that have high Q ratings for this show. Until someone on that team does me wrong, the Islanders don't do us wrong, right? They just own us because they're better.
They just beat the hell out of us these past couple of years, and especially
but it's not like
this year.
Like with the Capitals, they cheat. Right? Tom Wilson murders someone. They take it to a point where they're winning by playing dirty. The Tampa Bay Lightning literally cheat. I appreciate all the writing staff at our former employer, who are great people, I should say. Yes. And I will never say anything bad about them. But to change the narrative to say, well, you should be angry about the system. No, I can be angry about both. I have enough anger in my heart where I can be upset with the system and say that the Lightning are fucking cheats. What other sport would it, like, the NBA, you still got to follow the salary cap in the playoffs.
The only thing I can think of that's close to like this in the NBA is the Dirk Nowitzki contracts that he took for very cheap to then eventually be the Mavericks president. That's the only thing I can think of that's close. But it's not like the Mavericks
were
ever.
He did leave money on the table. Like,
yeah, he did.
He willingly, like, nobody on the Lightning is leaving money on the table. They're just paying everybody.
That's true. You're right. That's a good point.
If they said it was so funny watching the broadcast, because I'm sure you had the similar reaction that I did, where it felt like NBC was always getting close to saying that something fucking weird's going on in Tampa Bay.
See, okay, they said one thing.
Well, that's just hockey, baby.
At one point they said, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning are cheating. And then they paused for like the briefest pregnant pause. And they said, in the defensive zone. I was like, I see what you're doing. I know what you're doing over there.
They don't do that shit intentionally. But like, they came back from break after the second intermission, and they do this long intro because Kucherov had just scored two goals, and they're like, "Yeah, look at this. Did you know that there's this thing called long-term injured reserve, and it allows you to spend money when the player is not there? And then somehow
Kucherov
is just gone in the playoffs.
Incredible.
Anyway,
comes back,
here's
goals.
The rest of this game.
Yeah. They gained $20 million. Awesome.
Boy, if they were like, well, you would think that Nikita Kucherov would look a little rusty. You wouldn't. He's been skating for 6 fucking weeks. Like, what? I don't know the definition of rust, but like usually in order to be rusty, you'd have to like be immobile
like
for a long
come
period
right
of time.
Back.
So
like this is the first day you skated. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, give me a fucking break.
Friend of the show, Steve Alliquette. Tweeted out on May 15th. Interesting note from JT Bourne. Well, we'll actually have to get him on here one day. And he wrote Tampa Bay, and I feel like no one really picked up on it. Tampa Bay Lightning, $88 million versus Florida Panthers, $60 million with Ekblad out. Tampa Bay. I like that. Big fan of that one.
Yeah, but they're not, like, they're not tampering. They're circumventing.
Yeah, circumventing Bay.
Or, like, it's too bad it's not, like, Tampa City. Because then they could be like Circum City.
Yeah. Okay. That's no stretch. We're stretching now.
Yeah. Whatever. Fuck the Lightning is essentially what you get.
For sure.
Also, just because everyone's going to be watching this series for the millionth time, guys. I don't know why. I wish I could tell you why. Alexander Barkov fucking loves Sunrise, Florida, dude. He ain't coming.
One more thing.
He wants to stay there.
I think his extension is going to be like $13 million.
They don't care.
Not $10 million.
Yeah, people, it's like two schools of thought. One, it's just like, well, it's Florida, so Barkov must want out. The dude loves it. Every time anyone asks him, he's like, no, this is the fucking shit.
Yeah, but even then, like, when you see, like, Rick Carpinello or other people say, like, there's rifts and or rumors, like, I feel like that's a narrative we're just making up. Because everything you were saying it too, but everything I've ever heard or everything spoken about, there are just some guys who like where they play. Whether it's Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado or Barkov in Florida. Love to eat crow in this one. Love Rangers
honestly,
straight for him, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and honestly, while we're there, Braden Point in Tampa Bay, too. We know the Rangers
culture
tried.
Culture guy.
They actually, the Rangers legitimately tried with Point, and he said, nah, man, I don't want to leave Tampa Bay. Like yeah. Point's not the one I get upset about. Cirelli and Sergachev, I'll get upset about until the fucking cows come home. But Braden Point, I saw someone on Twitter was like, the entire NHL should be embarrassed. I was like, he's the one that actually wanted to stay. And we have, like, verifiable proof that someone tried, and he said no. So there's nothing you can do about Braden Point. But, yeah, and the other thing with Barkov, it's like it either needs to be the player's unhappy, he's not, or the organization is cheap, which the Panthers are not. They're going to be paying Bobrovsky for the rest of time, and they're very okay with it. They also wanted to – like, the only way Barkov would be a possibility is if they signed Panarin, and then they would be out of money. But they didn't sign Panarin. They only got Bobrovsky. So they're fine. He ain't leaving. I wish on all that is holy that Alexander Barkov would realize that Sunrise is a fucking retirement community with a strip mall and a shitty stadium, and he should want to get the fuck out of there. But he's just like, you know what? It's 40 minutes away from Miami. Fuck it. I'm good. I'm not leaving. And I my retort to that is I got nothing.
Yep.
Because he's already like
– good for him. I would love for him to be a Ranger. The more research I do on this, Greg, and I know kind of come to the off season of hashtag anything is possible, which has been quoted by me and you at this point in time.
Some things aren't possible though.
Some things are impossible, and Barkov is one of them. I keep thinking back, it's sort of, I don't want to say Eichel or bust, but I keep honing in as the Eichel. No, I know this is, listen, we've talked about Eichel almost ad nauseum for 6 months now. I don't know what the next move is after Eichel, because Tkachuk or all these other options, they aren't going to be the, hey, wow, this team is now good enough to win a cup kind of move. Eichel is kind of going to be, other than Barkov, which we explained already, probably won't happen, will be the only thing that is like, well, Mika Eichel, that's something you could really make a run with. I don't know if there's another center that really makes that difference.
Well, the key to this entire conversation is, with Eichel and with Barkov, again, the Rangers are addressing a serious need in our mind. While people think, and honestly, it's not even a while people think. Ryan Strome's been great for 2 years now. But if the Rangers want to be a serious contender, you have to make an argument that they might need – if they need to do better somewhere and they need to get a forward, we see how many wingers they have. It's hard for anyone to really talk themselves into the Rangers going out there and acquiring a winger that is a significant upgrade over what they have now, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the problem with a Matthew Tkachuk move, while we may like him, is – increase on a Pavel Buchnevich to a Matthew Tkachuk. It's like going from a B plus to an A minus. Like you enjoy the grade bump, but it's not going to help you get into Harvard. Whereas if you go from Strome to Eichel, you're talking about like a B average student all of a sudden graduating to a 4.0.
Yeah, that's it's a significant stratospheric upgrade. Jump for sure.
Yeah, and it's not just a stratospheric jump in terms of player to player. It's a stratospheric jump in terms of what you're able to do with your top six. Your top six is solid, but maybe it's not quite spectacular, but it's better than good, right? As currently constructed with the amount of pieces the Rangers have. If you have Zibanejad and Eichel and you can just play the matchup game on a nightly basis against a team that may only have one truly dominant pairing, like say the Pittsburgh Penguins or say the Washington Capitals or say the Philadelphia Flyers, and you can expose matchups more easily. And it's not like when Artemi Panarin is on the ice with Ryan Strome, part of why Strome, I don't know if, you know, Rob Luker will listen to this and have to produce 17 new charts that I didn't even know.
Yeah, if you don't follow Rob Luker, do that. Thanks.
Yeah, you absolutely should. He's fantastic. All the stat guys we talk about on the show, we do it tongue in cheek, but we also know that these guys are much smarter than us and they simplify the game in a way that'll help you understand what the fuck is happening.
Yep.
And I think it's great. So follow all these guys. But when Panarin is on the ice with Strome, it allows you the opportunity to just focus on Panarin, right? You have to watch where Panarin is all times, which is why Ryan Strome gets into situations where he's creating more offense because the defense can – it's one of those things where, listen, if Ryan Strome's going to beat us, fucking let him beat us. Like, they're daring him to beat them. And sometimes he has, and sometimes you see what happens when the man misses an open net. But you allow Ryan Strome to beat you. You put Artemi Panarin on a line with Jack Eichel. What the fuck are you supposed
to
do?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you do against that.
Yeah, it's
a healthy Jack Eichel.
Like
healthy.
It's like Bergeron playing with Pastrnak and Marchand. Like, what am I supposed to do when those three guys are on the ice at the same time?
Yeah, even Adam Fox is kind of like, well, I can only really guard two at most.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else am I supposed to do?
Yeah, it's changing the equation. And that's what happens when Zibanejad is on the ice with maybe teams are focusing more on Zibanejad, but everybody respects – I mean, the Lafreniere, we saw the leap he took when he started playing with Zibanejad. And Pavel Buchnevich has just evolved into this perfect winger for Mika Zibanejad that I don't think any of us truly ever thought we'd see. We always hoped, but I think you're kind of lying to yourself if you thought this is going to be the final form of Pavel Buchnevich. But if you tell me that in your top six you have a line that I don't even give a shit who's on the right wing – with Panarin and Eichel. I hope it's Kako. That would just do everything that I've ever wanted in my entire life. But you have Eichel and you have Panarin on the same line. The fuck is the opposing team supposed to do? What in God's name are they supposed to do against you? And then if they're not on the ice, you're telling me I have to deal with Zibanejad, Buchnevich, and Lafreniere? Give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
And that third line is, you know...
The third line is probably... We'll see.
Yeah. There's some tiers of players.
One of Kreider or Kravtsov will live on that third line, and they just get to be like, remember the year the Penguins won the Cup and Phil Kessel just decided to be the world's greatest third line winger?
Well, yeah, like, Phil Kessel on the third line is really unfair, especially when he was that good at that point in time.
I'm not saying Chris Kreider or Vitaly Kravtsov could be Phil Kessel, but you get to be the dude who gets to go up against bottom pairings the entire year, and you just get to use and abuse them nonstop because the opposing team has to play their top four against that top six. There's benefit to that. It makes the rest of the lineup deeper and better.
For sure. There is one thing I do want to mention. I've kind of been poking around a little bit.
Okay.
Having some discussions, talking New York Rangers all the time. As you know, as is tradition here on Blue Shirts Breakaway. And I can't help but think that there's something that absolutely stinks about the expansion draft. Now, former guest of the show and good friend of the show, Larry Brooks, wrote about the expansion draft today and how the Rangers might protect Gauthier. I'm not sure any of this protection stuff actually happens. I'm really not. I'm not sold. I think the Rangers are circling around other teams to make their situations easier. They have a space they'd be willing to protect another player. I don't think they're gung-ho about protecting anybody. Howden, Gauthier, Blackwell, etc. I don't think anybody is gung-ho. I have a feeling one of the teams they might take a look at is the Avalanche. Take a look at maybe Jost, who they've targeted before in the past, but that is going to come at a big cost, and that cost might come as Vitaly Kravtsov. They might maybe offer something less because the Avalanche are going to be on a bit of a crunch I just can't help but think here, Greg, that there's something more at play for the New York Rangers than just simply protecting Brett Howden or Gauthier. And I tried to get Larry on that last week, but we haven't been able to make any headway on it. It's something smells and I can't figure it out.
Well, the thing that smells to me, and I listen, I know it was partially me just trying to get my jokes off, because Ryan, Lord knows, I had a bit of a weekend. I needed to get – oh, shit, I forgot the Mets are playing right now.
yeah.
Boy, that's how hard of a week it's been for me, where I just that's a new one. Anyway, I'll deal with that later. I was getting my jokes off partially, but it's also kind of true. Like, I understand you are allowed to protect three defensemen. And I understand that the New York Rangers don't really have to protect a lot of defensemen, because just about everybody is exempt that needs to be worried about. But there's just, to me, it would be unacceptable if the New York Rangers went out, didn't try to get an upgrade on the defense at cost, and not have to protect Lieber Hayek. I get it that they're not going to protect Anthony Betetto. They shouldn't. They're not going to protect Anthony D'Angelo, because no one's going to take him, and the Rangers are going to buy him out. So these guys don't need to be protecting. So you essentially have an open spot on your defense where you can acquire a player that another team might not be able to protect, and you can try to do better than whatever the Seattle Kraken offer is to get that player and keep that player from even reaching the expansion draft. This is something the Rangers can do. And you're going to tell me that they're not going to do it because they're just going to be like, you know what? We have to protect Lieber Hayek.
Man Rocket has to happen. Yeah.
No, but you know what? Fine. If you want to – protecting one of Brett Howden, Julian Gauthier, whatever. That doesn't move the needle for me. Whether you like one player, whether you hate the other player. Both of those guys, whether one is here, one is not, they're not going to play more than fourth line minutes, most likely, if all goes well, next season. So, cool. Dude, I don't care. If it's the Man Rocket that gets protected,
We'll figure it out.
If it's Gauthier that gets protected, great. I think it's a player that still has some upside. But to me, it would be borderline irresponsible if the Rangers got to the expansion draft, took one look at their D, and said, you know what? I guess we are going to protect Lieber Hayek. Go out there and get someone worth protecting. Because it's not going to cost a boat to get – it doesn't have to be a Matthias Ekholm. It doesn't have to be Hampus Lindholm. It doesn't have to be Matt Dumba. It could just be a serviceable third-line defenseman that you traded a fifth-round pick for. Like, think John Merrill, except not John Merrill, because I'm pretty sure, once again, he's a free agent. You don't have to break down the doors with who this defenseman is. It could just be a pure upgrade over Brendan Smith that you got for a very late cheap draft pick because the other team didn't want to lose him in the expansion draft. That's a guy the Rangers should go out there and target, because it's just dare Seattle to take Hayek. What are we doing? It ain't this hard. I'm confident they ain't going to take him if you really like him. So you might as well just dangle him out there and be like, here, try.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Something stinks here, Greg, and I think something's up. I really do.
I agree. I think something smells pee-pee poo-poo.
For sure. I think that's all for our open. Anything else you want to touch on this week?
Nothing. Have we got any questions, or are we going to come back?
We're going to come back and do questions. Yeah.
Ooh,
why not? A little tease. Come on back after we hang out with John Scott. Why not?
Sure. Jesus Christ, it's the second inning already?
I know, right? Braves, who knew? All right, here we go. Let's take a transition over to our friend John Scott. We'll come back, do some questions and some other nonsense. Be right back. Transition. You thought there were going to be advertisements here, but there are not. Please support the show, patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway. Back to the show, and here is John Scott. Hey, we're back with our first and only guest today. We have John Scott. He hosts Dropping the Gloves. He is a former Ranger. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you got it, guys. Thanks for asking me. I'm very excited.
It's been a pleasure watching hockey the last 24 hours. Do you think have we peaked? Has the NHL hockey peaked, and is it all downhill from here?
No, it's just getting started. I'm excited. It's such a weird playoff scenario. It's such a weird playoff format where it's new. It's exciting. I'm really, really interested to see what happens once these teams get out of the conference stage and get into the Final Four. I'm super geeked out about how teams are going to adjust and game plan and things like that, because it's super unheard of. It's completely unheard of to go into a semifinals for the Stanley Cup and you've never played against the team you're playing. Like, this is completely unheard of. So I'm really, really interested to see how the coaches react, how the players are going to, you know, game plan and stuff. So I don't know. No, the best is yet to come, guys. Come on.
John, before we get into the nitty gritty, do you think there's a team that stands out among the rest going into the playoffs?
Like, I wanted to say Vegas, but then Minnesota just kind of dominated. I don't want to say dominated, but they took it to them last game. But if not them, I would say the Avalanche. They look pretty solid. They have some question marks too. So I don't know. No, there's no team that just stands out head and shoulders above the rest. No.
We host the New York Rangers show, as you probably have heard. And at this point, we follow the Rangers all year. They, at one point, had the highest goal differential in this entire division. And yet, I can't help but think, after watching the first day of East hockey playoffs, that the Rangers would have absolutely no chance if they were here. Your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. Totally agree. They have the pieces, and the rebuild there, I think, you know, it was 3, 4, 5 years from when they just completely tore the team down when they traded Callahan and all those guys. And they're in a good spot. They made some good signings. They have some good young players. Hopefully they can figure it out. And with the train wreck that happened at the end of the season, yeah, I don't know what to expect for this coming season. But, gosh, if there was ever a time, like, how do you ruin a good situation that's going to turn into, like, a good team in 2, 3, 4 years? The Rangers did it. Because you guys were set. You had all the pieces in place. The players loved the coach. Everything was going great. And then one incident just completely just everything's out the window, and now we're just starting from scratch. It's brutal. I don't know how you guys are going to be next year, but, man, just a complete bot went off in Madison Square Garden with Tom Wilson went after Panarin.
Well, John, you brought it up, so let's talk about the flashpoint moment, that whether it what actually triggered everything that happened thereafter or whether it was just – the world's biggest coincidence. By now, I think everybody has seen your video on Twitter talking about how you felt of the decision. Has your opinion mellowed over the last 2 weeks? Do you feel more so feeling one way or the other? I mean, for example, the game we all watched last night, Panthers-Lightning. Sam Bennett picks up a one-game suspension, I think deserved, for his boarding penalty. And yet Ryan McDonagh, a very similar penalty, not even a hearing. What's up? What are your views today on NHL player safety?
I completely agree with you. There's no rhyme or reason. You know, McDonagh's hit was very similar. He could have rightfully got a one-game suspension, but he doesn't. Sam Bennett, same kind of hit, same kind of play. He gets the game. There's no rhyme or reason. I said it before, and I'll say it again. I think there needs to be more transparency and what goes on, and George Parros' thought process. And he should say, this is why I'm giving Bennett a suspension. This is why I'm not giving McDonagh a suspension. There's too much gray area where we just don't know what he's thinking. And it's mind-numbing for players, because if I'm Sam Bennett, I'm looking at this point like, how the heck is Ryan McDonagh not suspended and I'm getting a game in the playoffs? It doesn't make sense to me, and I don't know. And just going back to the Wilson thing, I think Parros completely dropped the ball. I stand by my statement. I'm even more strong now because Wilson scored. He's an impact player for Washington, and in my opinion, he should not be on the ice right now. So he could potentially win the Capitals that series, and he does not deserve to be on the ice.
It almost feels like star treatment to me, because if Ryan McDonagh's name was Sam Bennett, I just have a feeling that he would have been suspended. Whereas a player like Tom Wilson of his caliber, who, even though he has the truly awful reputation and has been a repeat offender, they just didn't do it because he's that guy. He's a ratings drawer. Is that something you maybe have picked up on as a trend for player safety and punishment?
Well, yeah, he scores. He's a very entertaining player. The fans love him. He's just that guy. He has the look. He's a handsome dude. If you get a guy to do all of Tom Wilson's hits and put a name on the back that says Zach Rinaldo, or a guy who's played for the Rangers, Brendan Lemieux, he's getting twice or three times as many games as Tom Wilson ever got. So I definitely think there is a bias there. As much as the NHL, you know, will just, no, there's no bias. You know, we treat every player the same. BS, you don't. You want the star players in the game. You want to sell the game, and Tom Wilson sells the game. That's what he does. So it is what it is. I don't hate it. I get it. But I would just, if they would just be transparent, be like, listen, we're not going to suspend Crosby for a spear because he's Sidney Crosby. We're going to suspend whoever else for a spear because he's a nobody. You know what I mean? Like, we need Sidney Crosby. We'll give him a fine, but we're not going to suspend him because he's good for the game. It just, it's okay to say that, I think. People would understand.
John, one thing that has always fascinated me with the NHL, and you have a unique perspective on this because you are a former enforcer, a big body, that it's the role of a deterrent in the current day NHL. And we saw a lot of talk after the Wilson mugging, whatever you want to call it, about how the Rangers don't have that guy in their lineup that'll make someone like Tom Wilson think twice. Do you think deterrence are a real thing? If Ryan Reeves was a New York Ranger, does it stop Tom Wilson from trying to put Artemi Panarin through the Madison Square Garden floor?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like across the board. If you have the nuclear button on your bench and all you have to do is push it and then, you know, you're going to get destroyed, no one's going to mess with you. When I was with the Rangers, I went into Glenn Sather's office and he said, John, I like to have the biggest, baddest, toughest guy on my team. And you look at every team Slats has ever had, he's always had that guy who was feared throughout the league. And he's been on successful teams. He's arguably one of the best GMs of all time. Maybe top two, top three. Lou Lamoriello's up there. He's in very rarefied air. And it just goes, fear is real. People get afraid. Tom Wilson, for as much as he wants to say, oh, I would have done the same thing, maybe he would have done something to Panarin. He would never have gone to the extent that he went to. Because I talked to Ryan Reeves last week on my show, and Ryan's like, listen, if I play for the Rangers, Tom's not doing that. I played Tom many, many times. And yeah, he hits, he plays his game, but he doesn't cross the line. He plays within the boundaries. And I completely believe that because I played for a decade and I played against some of the biggest rats in the game, the guys who were just complete animals out there. And when I stepped on the ice, they were minding their P's and Q's. Yeah, they would finish their checks, but they weren't trying to bury guys. They weren't trying to take guys out. They were playing a really, really calm game. And you can't tell me that that's not because they were scared of getting their doors beat off if they, you know, crossed that line. I would just take it behind the woodshed. Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. You mentioned getting trades to the Rangers. If you wouldn't mind telling, I've heard of the rumors of this story. I actually haven't heard it myself. What was it like meeting Torts the first time at the Rangers? What is the whole story of you actually getting traded to the Rangers and then having the meter with the Dark Emperor himself, Slats?
Yeah, it's funny. You never expect to get traded. I was in Chicago. I got the call right at 3:01 of the trade deadline. I was like, great. My GM's calling. I'm getting sent down. That's what I'm thinking. We got somebody. I'm getting sent down. He goes, no, you got traded to New York. I'm like, oh, great. I got traded to the Islanders. They were last place. He's like, no, you're going to the Rangers. They're first place in the East. I was like, whoa, okay, cool. Jumped on a plane later that day, went to the practice rink in White Plains, walked into the room, go and meet Slats. He gives me the story. He's got his cigar. We want the toughest guy, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, great, I'm here. We already had Rupp. You already had Stu Bickle. You already had Brandon Prust. So it's not like I'm walking into a team that needs toughness. You guys had toughness for days. So I don't know why I'm there. I go into the dressing room. I get my equipment. I walk into the workout room. Tortorella's there. He's like, hey, like, what are you doing here? I was like, I just got traded here. He's like, really? I had no idea. I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, come into my office. And I sit down and he goes, well, listen, I had no idea we were going to get you. Obviously, I know who you are. I don't know how we're going to use you or if we're going to use you. But, yeah, and that was it. And I just got up and left. I was like, cool. And I played a couple games at the end of the season. And that was it. And I don't know, me and Torts butted heads. I was a black ace. Maybe I could have dealt with it better. But we had a couple FU battles, and we went back and forth. And it is what it is. Torts is a fiery personality, and I don't really back down from somebody. And we just kind of butted heads a little bit. But I enjoyed my time there. But, gosh, that Tortorella, he can really – if he doesn't like you, he lets you know, and he did not like me.
Well, I have a follow-up. Hold on. So you go into Sather, and he's holding a cigar? I need more details.
He just, you know, Slats, he always had the cigar. He was chomping on it. So I go in his office, and I don't know if you've ever been in his office.
No, I haven't had the pleasure, John.
Oh, my goodness. He had literally every hockey player in North America and Europe on a little magnet stuck to his wall. Every team, he had their NHL roster, their AHL roster, their East Coast roster, and all their prospects. And I'm not kidding you. He had thousands of names on the wall. It was wild.
Wow.
And he looked me in the eye. He's like, listen, I wanted you here. I want the biggest, baddest guy. That's you. We want to re-sign you. We love what you do. Go out there and just protect our guys. And I was like, great. Sounds good. And obviously, we couldn't come to terms at the end of the season just because I didn't like Torts. But it was cool to hear that from a GM, because usually they just kind of pussyfoot around the idea, like, oh, you know, do what you want to do. And Torts Flash is like, someone messes with their team, I want you to beat the piss out of them. That's what you're here for. I was like, perfect. Thank you. I can do that.
So, John, tell me if I'm hearing all this correctly. You think John Tortorella is the favorite to be the Rangers head coach?
No. Imagine that. No way. There's no chance he goes back to New York. No chance whatsoever.
Yeah, nope. He's third in the odds right now, but we don't think he's actually a threat to get the job. I think they're going to interview him. I think he has a lot of good people that like him there, or rather he has good standing with those people, but I can't imagine they're like, you know what we need to do right now? Torts again.
You think Panarin and Zibanejad and Strom and those guys are going to be successful under that guy?
No.
There's not a chance in the world. No chance whatsoever.
No, not at all. It's a situation where it's like, well, you saw Panarin and CBJ, right? I've been told by multiple people that, you know, well, there was a reason he played his best season ever under David Quinn, is because David Quinn was like, hey, I really don't even know how to coach you. You're the best player I've ever had. Like, what do I do? You know hockey better than I do. I'll coach everybody else. You do yourself. Where Torts forced him to play under that system. To follow up on your other question, Sather still pulls some strings with the New York Rangers. There's been a lot of talk about toughness, and a lot of talk about adding that style or that grit to the team. What do you see the Rangers maybe doing on the fourth line this season? Or maybe do you think they'll add an enforcer? Do you think they'll trade for somebody of that ilk or that toughness?
Well, it doesn't necessarily, you don't need a one-dimensional enforcer. I feel like there's only a few of them left in the game. Mm-hmm. I just think you need a guy who can handle himself. You know, I don't know why they traded Brendan Lemieux. I don't know how he was acting in the locker room, if he kind of was having issues with the guys, but he filled that role. You know what I mean? You were a little scared of him, not because he's like the super tough guy who can like just throw bombs and beat up Tom Wilson. But he's a little bit of a loose cannon where, you know, he might stick you in the face. He might, you know, take a run at your best player from behind. You need that little bit of crazy in your lineup. And I feel like New York doesn't have that. And they need to address it. They don't need to go out and get an old-fashioned goon. You just need a guy who the other team is scared of. I know when I played a team and they had a Chris Neal or a Zach Rinaldo, or even when you got like a Brandon Prust, you need a guy who, you know, you second-guess yourself when you're going into a corner. Either I'm going to get blown up by this guy, or if I hit somebody, he's going to jump me from behind and I have to answer for something. So the Rangers don't have that. Brendan Smith isn't scaring anybody. He's very predictable. He's not tough. So they need to find something to just, you know, make teams think twice. Make Tom Wilson think twice before he goes and takes a run at somebody. Because he will if you get someone.
John, I as a former All-Star, I think your opinion on the next question for me is quite important. The Jack Eichel situation. Have you ever seen a situation go that sour, seemingly that quickly, and also that publicly in the National Hockey League?
Not with a player of his caliber this early in his career. Like, he's still on his entry-level contract, if I'm not correct. I think he's within 5 years of entering the league. So to just go from being the second overall pick to being the block we're going to build our franchise around, you're the guy, to 5 years later being like, listen, I want out of here. You've done, like, they did everything they can to just make that team fail. I don't know how many coaches they've had. I don't know how many GMs they've had under Jack Eichel. I don't blame them. Like, it's a complete train wreck what Buffalo has done the last 5-6 years and Jack's been there. And there's no stability. When you're a young player, you just want to see some kind of hope. You want to see something to kind of grab onto. It's like, we have a great coach. We have a great GM. I can see the light. Let's go. Buffalo, they change their identity every, it seems like, 5 months, and they don't know what kind of team they are. Are we going to rebuild? Are we going to be contending? We're going to go get Taylor Hall. Oops, that didn't work. Let's just, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater again. We're just going to start again. So I don't blame him. The stuff with the GM and the coach and this and that, that's just a bad culture. That should never get out to the media. That should never happen. Jack Eichel should never have that press conference at the end of the year and say what he said. It's out of control. And I don't know. I don't know how that's going to end up. I really hope they sort it out, but gosh, he's not happy. He's not happy at all.
The point you brought up is the one that I kind of keep getting stuck on. It's if the Sabres knew all this stuff was happening behind the scenes, under what circumstances do they say, hey, Jack, you want to do a end of season interview with the media that you can say whatever the hell you want? Like, what was the end game there from their standpoint that made them think, yeah, this will go fine. This will be okay.
Yeah. Like, do you think Chris Drury might have, you know, grabbed them? Hey, Jack, you know, maybe let's talk a little bit before you go out there and just, like, set our franchise on fire? Because that's the thing with Buffalo. I guarantee you they didn't have any conversations with them because it's just so dysfunctional over there. Nobody gets it. I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry, not Chris Drury. Kevin Adams. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you Kevin Adams didn't say anything to him. It's just a mess. Nobody gets it. The owners are just complete. And I like Terry and Tim Pegula. I consider them friends. They don't know. They don't know what they're doing. They just have a lot of money. And they succeeded with the Bills, luckily, because they have a good GM and a good coach. Buffalo doesn't have that. Kevin Adams is not a good fit to be a GM. He has no experience. Maybe in 10 years, but golly. And then if they trade him, they're going to get fleeced again because he already said he wants out. So teams are just licking their chops. Like, we'll give you a second round.
That was my follow-up question here is because we're on the Twitter all the time talking about trades. And the question I get the most is, hey, what's the trade packet for Jack Eichel? I get it 17 times an hour at least. And everybody that's a Buffalo fan says, hey, if you're not including Lafreniere or Kako or both in the couple first-round picks, this is never happening. But I just can't imagine a scenario where, one, he plays for Buffalo again, or two, there's actually a trade package that is worth his true value. I think he's either in L.A. or he's in New York at the start of next season, and I almost don't see a scenario where that's not the case.
And whenever you look at a trade that involves a superstar who is young, the team getting the superstar always makes out a lot better. The team who got Joe Thornton, San Jose Sharks, made out like gangbusters when they traded them, when they got him from Boston. The Wayne Gretzky trade, the Eric Lindros trade, all these trades where you're trading superstars, no one knows how these prospects and these draft picks are going to turn out. You're getting a legit superstar. Jack Eichel has been, I would say, top five player in the NHL since he entered the league. He is that good. And because he plays in Buffalo, he doesn't get the recognition. He is a very good hockey player. He's better than Lafreniere. He's better than Kako. He's better than they'll ever be, in my opinion. He's that good of a player. So if you can get him, I would trade him straight up from Lafreniere right now, hands down. I would give a – where do I sign? Let's get that done. Because Jack Eichel, he's a special hockey player.
They won't do that. He's like one of their untouchables. But I think if you were in the long term to compare their careers, you have a really good case to make there, especially after Lafreniere's first year. But they're looking to do both.
I'll add one caveat, though. Does the neck injury bother you at all as someone who played the game, understands the game a little bit better than two guys under the height of 5 feet that probably can't throw
under
a punch
5 feet
to save their lives? 6 feet, I should say. We are taller than 5 feet.
I was going
to
say, fellas. Holy moly.
Real niche podcasting here.
Yeah, it's a cause for concern, but you get them checked out by doctors. They have specialists and stuff. You can get that looked at. It doesn't concern me too much. If you think if he really wanted to play, he could have played this year. And there's he didn't want to play for Buffalo at the end. They were no one wanted to play for Buffalo. It was just a bad hockey team and a bad time, and they didn't have fans. Thank goodness that was their only saving grace. But no, I don't worry about that. He's a young kid. He'll heal. He's a stud, man. Honestly, he's an absolute stud.
Was there anybody, circling back to your time on the Rangers, was there anybody when you were on the team and you were like, man, this guy could be a real coach one day or a GM when you were in the locker room?
Dan Girardi.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah. He was great. I love that guy. Just coincidentally, I played against him growing up as a kid. He was from Welland. I was from St. Catharines. So he was just very calm, very smart, and just had a good demeanor about him. You know, he didn't get too excited. Never got too down, and I could just see him being just really level-headed, making a really good, prudent decision when it was needed. And I don't know what he's doing now, but he would be good Buffalo. In the front office.
He's in Buffalo.
Is he in Buffalo?
Yeah, he's a coach in their defense now, yeah.
Buffalo hires so many former players. It's insane. All they do is hire former players. Maybe that's what they're doing wrong.
Well, I would like Dan Girardi one day to come back to the Rangers, as we've kind of been pumping that. I think he could be a good coach train for a long time. So you saying that really validated me, and I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Gregory, any final questions for our dear friend John here?
Who, if Ryan's going to go, who you thought should be a coach on those Ranger teams? Was there a guy where you would be like, you know, I'm not really sure about this guy, just in terms of anything? Is there a guy that you would like specifically? You don't have to name names. You can just tell us, you know, when we're not recording, who the real guy is. But is there a guy on the team that you were just like, you know, that something's a little loose up there? What's going on? What's happening?
I would say Dubinsky. He was a little weird. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want him coaching my team. So, but he's, you know, he's a good guy, but I don't think I would trust him, you know, as far as I could throw him.
Amazing.
But here's the thing, though, John. You're a big dude. You could actually throw him. So that you might actually have more trust than any of the rest of us would with him.
I do have
one. Well, I don't want to dump on him. He's a great guy, but if you're talking GM coaching, you know, that kind of position, I don't think he is fit for that. He's too fiery. He's too unpredictable. He's just like a loose cannon out there. You don't know what he's going to do. So I don't think I would have Doobie for that position.
I do have one final question, actually. You may or be familiar with this team called the Tampa Bay Lightning and how they maybe have added, like, I don't know, two superstar players right before the playoffs. A little just super coincidence at this point in time. Would that piss, if you were a player, would that piss you off if you were on the other team? Like, hey, this team just magically added two healthy superstars?
You just got to tip your hat to their GM, Brisebois. It was absolutely perfect the way he worked this year. Kucherov took the year off. He still got paid. It would not upset me. I'll just say that. I'm like, good for you guys. You guys game the system perfectly. You got Stamkos and Kucherov back. And, like, Kucherov he's unbelievable. Like, he scores 3 points and he hasn't played in a year. Like, it's not many guys can do that. It would not upset me. Maybe if I was Florida, I would be a little sore about it. But what are you going to do? It's the game. They played within the rules. Anybody could have done it. It is what it is. You can't get upset him for playing in the rules.
Yeah, if I had to hear that broadcast team talk about Rust and Nikita Kucherov one more time, though, I was walking in the traffic. No question
about
it.
They beat that dog to death. Like, it was terrible.
All right, John. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Can't appreciate your time enough. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, no, I don't care.
Cool.
Thanks for having me on.
Cool.
Guys.
Awesome, John. We'll talk. Maybe we'll talk again sometime next year when the season starts up.
Absolutely, guys. Good.
Pleasure. Talk soon, man. Thank you. And we're back. All right. Good interview, I think. I hope.
I think. Imagine it wasn't.
Yeah.
Boy, this is going to be awkward.
Imagine it was like he was like, you guys suck.
Oh, my God. It's part two of that interview we did with a certain reporter that one time.
Yep, that's correct. Anyway, only the in people know that.
Only real ones know.
Only real ones know. Speaking of real ones, let's do some 5-star questions, shall we? Here's some 5-star questions from our Discord. You can sign up to our Discord today. Go to patreon.com/bluechurchbreakaway. Become a supporter. Alrighty then. Let's ask someone, shall we? Ryan, I did that one. Yes, cool. Sorry, I had this one. I like the odds bit regarding Eichel. This is from Matty Jack. Regarding Eichel, can you guys talk about the odds of Gallant landing in New York? Yeah, we can. I think Gallant is 5-2 right now, and then I think Bob Hartley is the second of those choices. I can't imagine. To me, it's this, Greg, and tell me if you think different. Gallant is already the New York Ranger coach unless some other team magically offers him way more money, which would not happen, or B, Rod gets sent out of Carolina and somehow
Carolina. I don't know what part to read into more. You saying Carolina or starting with one?
You like that one? You like the one B thing?
I do. I will. I'll say this. This is just me reading tea leaves, Ryan.
Sure, that's what we do.
I'm sure some people will just call me a hater for saying this.
I'm holding my crystals.
I think some of the Gallant stuff is overblown because the Rangers made such a priority to interview him before the World Championships. Some of me wonders if everyone's thinking that it's this foregone conclusion strictly because the Rangers wanted to get the interview out of the way. I wonder if everyone thinks he's the favorite because all the buzz was, oh, the Rangers really want to interview him. They really want to interview him. They want to get him in the room. They want to see what he's all about. But did the Rangers really want to interview him to get him in the room because he's the favorite? Or do the Rangers really want to interview him because they don't have the patience to wait until after the World Championships? They'd rather do it now so they can do their due diligence on everybody else. Or maybe it's a little shade of gray and it's a little bit of both. But where I sit, the possibility exists that Gallant was the first person to get interviewed because the Rangers only had a 48-hour period to get it done. And now, like, you know, read into it what you will. I'm just proposing the scenario in which Gallant's getting all this early buzz because the Rangers felt propelled to do this interview before the World Championships. Whereas if Gallant's not the coach of Team Canada, right? Maybe. When does the interview happen then? Is it still the first one that happens near days after Drury gets the job? Is it a little bit further down the line? What's the timeline if he's not the national team coach? That's what I want to know. Of course, we never will know.
We never will know.
We don't have to know. But I do think the scenario exists where everyone has confused Gallant as the favorite with just this is the timeline in which the interview happened, and now the Rangers are going to get down to business.
We'll be covering that every single week, as you guys know, so stay tuned. Next question is from Hello Vanilla. How much of the defensive improvements came from Marty Jocks? And can we assume can we assume the same will happen with the blue line with the new coaching staff? We can assume nothing. We know that Marty Jocks came in here and solidified the penalty kill for the New York Rangers to the best it's been in a very, very, very long time and made some substantial defensive improvements. If you want to give him credit for Buchnevich or maybe even Kapokako, you can maybe give him some of that too. We can assume absolutely nothing. I think you would agree, Greg.
Yeah, but I also say it's not like I'm not expecting the New York Rangers to revert back to Lindy Ruff era defensive atrocities with Jacques Martin not here. I think it's, you know, I would hope players have learned something from what Jacques taught them and they're able to carry that over into whoever happens to be the
right.
next.
It's like you had a great Rangers. Teacher for one year and they left an imprint on you for the rest of your life.
Right. I'm not saying it's going to be the exact same. That's irresponsible because it's not going to be the same system. You're going to be asked to do different things. But Jacques Martin deserves a whole lot of credit. I think we have given him the correct amount of credit for what he's done. But I also think some of what Martin did was just asking players to do something that they weren't being asked to do before.
That comes from the Buchnevich interview where they tried him out on PK one day as like a joke and he showed a little bit of promise and Marty Jocks was like, yeah, we're going to keep him out there even though he wasn't ever like going to be tried in that role whatsoever. And turned out really well for Pavel Buchnevich and the New York Rangers.
Yeah. Would that have happened if Martin wasn't here? Would that have happened if it was still Lindy Ruff? Who's to say? Not us for sure, but, you know, Martin was able to put players in a position that most people would not have thought to put certain players into. And Ryan Lindgren, a lot of credit goes to Ryan Lindgren for how much personal work he's put into his own game. I would say Keandre Miller, we're just scratching the surface about what's going on there. And how much of Jacob Trouba's improvement from Ruff to Martin is simply Jacob Trouba just having 1 year of New York under his belt? Because it's a big move for him. I the more you look at it, you can peel back as many layers as you want and say, well, maybe it was one thing, maybe it was another. All we know is Jacques Martin was great. Mm-hmm. If Jacques Martin came back, I think we'd all be very happy about it. In fact, I'll say this. Jacques Martin coming back to be the Rangers defensive coach, I think I'd be more excited about that than whoever the Rangers name is their head
coach. You can put that in the books to quote a great team. All right, let's go to the next question. This is from Nick I. What makes the Rangers a better team with Eichel at 10 per year, minus the prospects it takes to get him, or Mika, $8 million a year with those prospects? It's about getting both. It's never about having one. I would like to make this super clear. I think if the Rangers prioritize, what the hell is going on? Letting Mika go and then only getting Eichel, they are in a worse position than they are now. They need to get both, and that's how you make Stanley Cup runs. It's not about getting one. It's about getting both.
I would agree. I don't know if it's the Rangers will be in worse position if it's Eichel over Zibanejad. I think it's kind of
similar.
Yeah, you're just you're trading like green tea for Earl Grey. It's all kind of the same.
You do have to lose the prospects that have some talent, though. And prospects always don't work out. It's important to note that they don't always work out. They're not always
sure,
magical
but we
beings.
Also the Rangers aren't going to let Zibanejad waltz his way to free agency either.
No way, no chance.
So the goal should be both. I don't think we're having this conversation unless it is both. There was once upon a time where I floated the idea of a way the Rangers could do an Eichel trade that was a three-teamer where another team took Zibanejad and the Rangers recoup some of those assets in the Zibanejad trade. But those days have come and gone. I don't believe that to be the case anymore. Let me put it this way. If it's not Eichel Zibanejad, it's also not Eichel Strom. And the Rangers still would have to go out and find another top six center to go with Eichel if they want to move on from Zibanejad. Ryan Strom will not be a New York Ranger in 2022 opening night.
Hard for me to believe.
That is, yeah, I will stay very, very firm on that claim.
Vinny Hay asks, will the Rangers have a captain opening night? Yes, his name is Jacob Trouba.
I agree.
Since the Lord and Savior is not untouchable, this is from David. Since the Lord and Savior is not untouchable, what say minimally reasonable trade you would say yes to if you were a GM? I think if Buffalo comes to you and says, we'll do the 2021 first and Kaapo Kakko, and you get Jack Eichel, you say yes.
Yeah, I would say Kakko in the first is about all I put in that package. Like, if they want a haul, you get into the argument of, like, do you want quantity over quality almost, right?
Yep.
If you want a haul, you can't have Kaapo Kakko. If you want Kaapo Kakko, you're only getting the 2021 first to do it too.
Which that would never happen. So that's never going to go down. Buffalo would never say, "Hey, we want Kaapo Kakko." It's a points-based league. It's points-based results, and we all know if you watch the Rangers this year, what Kaapo Kakko did, taking like tremendous defensive strides forward, and he showed the flashes of what he can really be in the next couple years. But they don't look at it like that. They look that he scored like 9 goals. That's it. That's all they see.
And again, it would be irresponsible for the Buffalo Sabres to come to the Rangers and not ask for Kaapo Kakko.
No, it would be irresponsible for them not to ask for Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko.
Yeah, like it's irresponsible for them, one, for not asking, and then two, you're setting just a horrible market for yourself. Like if another team hears that you're not even asking for Kaapo Kakko from the Rangers, they ain't going to offer you shit either. Like you have to ask for something that makes other teams go, oh, fuck. All right, well, if we have to come close to that, we have to actually offer X, Y, and Z. So this is just negotiation. This is what it takes. Just we have recent history for this, too. I understand it's other sports, but just look at the packages in November for what people were saying it would cost to get Francisco Lindor. And then look at what the Mets traded to get Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. Like, shit's going to change. And what their teams are actually talking about is not what we're going to hear. So there are scenarios in which I would trade Kaapo Kakko. They're few and far between. And I'm not going to verbally say who the players are, but it rhymes with Schmanner Schmickmavid, and it rhymes with Schmathan Schmickschminen.
Yeah, I would say those are guys I would trade Kaapo Kakko for. Those fake imaginary people are probably people I'd do with Tim. Phil L. asks, with the NYR season over, do you have any interest in the World Championships? Zero.
No, none.
None.
You know why I don't have interest? I'm not, as much as I love Kevin Rooney, I ain't looking for him to play fucking second line minutes with Team USA.
Yeah.
Like, look at that team. Our guy Adam Clendenning is playing for Team USA this year.
Love Adam.
What am I supposed to watch and learn from this World Championship? If you need something to watch this summer, Euros for soccer are back. Watch that.
There's a lot of good sports on right now. Listen, if that's your thing, you want to watch Filipino go play a little bit, feel free. It's fun. I'm sure I'll retweet the highlights and we'll talk about the plays. I'm not going to watch the games. All right. If Howden is – this is from Brother Mocha. Mochia? I don't know. Whatever. If Howden is no longer on the Rangers next season, who is the candidate in line to be the team's honorary man rocket that can get it?
A lot of good-looking New York Rangers, for starters.
That's for sure. Smith's not going to be around, though, probably. So but he's...
you have to. The problem is the man rocket rule exists because it's one part he's extremely good looking,
right?
But it's more of a part of we spend too much time talking about someone that is just irrelevant. So you have to find a guy who is both attractive and just not worth the time to actually
see.
Discuss.
I think Barron has too much potential. I would choose him, but I think he could be too good.
Yeah,
he's got those really crystal blue eyes, for sure.
I guess it the people who think Morgan Barron's like a future top six guy,
yeah,
like Morgan Barron's probably going to be a bottom six forward with small potential scoring upside in his career. So he might get to a point where people in 2 years are still hoping and wishing for Morgan Barron to get his next big shot, and it just ain't going to happen.
I have the answer. I think I have the answer.
Lieber Hayek ain't a good looking dude.
No, he's not. What if it's my client, Keith Kincaid?
No. No, because Keith's worth talking about in the sense that the reason Keith being under contract with the Rangers and having a solid backup goalie is why Alexander Georgiev is just overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's not Keith isn't overrated. We're not spending too much time talking about Keith. We're actually spending too much time talking about Georgiev, which is the problem. I don't think Georgiev's the answer either, because he's fine, but he's like a New York five.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough.
Stay tuned.
The hardest player to replace this offseason might be Brett Howden, because I can't think of someone that attractive that I shouldn't give two shits about. Like, that is a real niche role on the New York Rangers.
Oh, Howden.
That
they're
is just not
going
to be easily replaced.
All right, these questions have been brought to you.
By the way,
you.
He's also going to be a New York Ranger come opening night.
Probably. These questions have been brought to you by our Patreons. Our subscribers keep this show going, including these wonderful subscribers, Alex Gardner, Amber Cohenberger, Ben Waters, Brian Doyle, Rugby Shoot, Blue Shirt Bleeder, CJ Stallwagon, David Narinen, David Sagel, Dennis Deitz, Eric Stagg, George Obritsky, JD, Jimmy Mack, Chris from Florida, Kyle Franklin, Lazik Gronskonski, he's going to murder me for that, Matthew Goodwin, the legendary Matthew Kine, Pavel Kondrovskev, I tried to pronounce that one beforehand, Ryan, Stephen Lomayer, Stig Buhl from Ulsa, Swangard, Tommy O'Neill, Tori Manhattan, the all-time contributor, and Vinny Hay and Will Spector. Okay, thank you guys so much, really appreciate it. We're going to do a fun banner thing sometime soon. All right, we have some other five-star questions before we get out of here. Just a couple quick ones. This is from Alex in the UK. This is from our reviews. Hi, guys. Love your show, but never asked anything before. I'm a fan from the UK and have followed the Rangers along with other American sports for years. But being mainly from England and the main passion for the here is football, I'm confused as to why international hockey is not as big as international football. Just seen an American team announcement, and so many players are not there. It's probably their own choice. If there was international football, players would be slandered if they didn't go. What is happening?
It's just international football is different.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. There's
so much pride in where you play for.
We should also tell people what by football he means soccer.
Yes.
It's just different. First of all, it's a pandemic. So who wants to go to fucking Latvia after they've been away from their family for the last 5 months?
Not many people.
Can't really blame anyone. Second, they tried playing 56 games over like a
10-week
period.
Yeah.
So what the fuck? Like, I would be upset if Adam Fox tried to play for Team USA right now. You see all the big names. They always want to play in the Olympics because that's as – the problem is, like, the World Championships, no one gives – like, it's – that's the equivalent of essentially a glorified team-friendly for soccer.
Yep.
Like, I don't expect star players to always play in every team friendly. Sometimes we see Team USA roll out just a lineup of MLS scrubs when they have to play fucking Curacao or fucking St. Kitts,
sure,
whatever the small island nations are. If this was the Olympics, it's fair to question. But the World Championships, calling it the World Championships, it feels disingenuous for what the event actually is. Because it always happens during the Stanley Cup playoffs. So usually the top-tier players are never available. And the ones that do become available only become available after teams get eliminated when the tournament has already been going on for X amount of time. It's just – it's not really an international tournament. It's more of just like excuse to keep playing hockey for guys who were eliminated.
Yeah.
Most of the guys just want to play fucking golf.
It's true. All right, this is we're gonna got a couple more for over the seas, foreign, I guess, whatever you want to say. This is from our friend Ray. Hey, Ray, what's up, man? Hey, guys, just a quick word for on a brilliant work you've done in the past week. It's been a shocking time with Tom Wilson game and removal of JD and Gordon. You guys were all over it. Looking forward to your summer content. Quick question. Would you rather have a lame and young in charge as president, GM, and head coach for the next 5 years, or use Jack Johnson on your top D-man pair for the next 3 years? Come on down, Jackie. Come on back.
Yeah, I'd rather.
Not even close.
Adam Fox is that good? In your words, Ryan, I hear he's limitless.
He's limitless. It's true. It's true.
Yeah, sure. I'll survive Jack Johnson if I can't do. Vino. Also, shout out Southampton. They survived relegation once again.
God bless. This is from a friend in Vietnam. Crazy.
What?
I know, right? Hey, guys, been listening forever to the show. This is IMS 1195. You're a huge part of how I keep up with the Rangers from Vietnam, so thank you. Never felt the need to write before after last week. I need to give some perspective. JG and JD did a great job while they were here, and I have no doubt they were completely aware of the next moves that needed to be made. And I know Joe Drury is highly regarded around the league and has been for apparently a while now, but I'm worried about Dolan showing his true colors and about Sather's reappearance. Dolan is impulsive, listens to Sather, who is overly aggressive, but concerned about Drury is a Sather puppet. Talk me off the ledge.
I think we'll know more. We don't know yet, but I think we'll know soon.
I think you'll know a lot about Drury pretty soon. The draft is mid-July. You're gonna know a lot about Chris Drury before then.
We're gonna learn exactly what the word autonomous means for the New York Rangers by midsummer, like or August. By the time Saratoga is running the Traverse Stakes, we'll know exactly how autonomous the New York Rangers front office is.
Agreed. Last question, and then we're out of here. This is from Lindy's Rough. Don't got to read this on the pod. Just a solid review for the number one New York Rangers podcast. Oh, it said don't read. That's weird. Okay, interesting.
If there's anything I know, Ryan, it's that you can't read.
It's true. Also, if you're looking for some guests to fill the offseason, us listeners would love a check-in from off the internet Woj. I've checked in with Woj before. He's doing very well. I don't think he's a podcast man these days. But maybe I'll ask him.
I thought he was going to say our moms.
Yeah, our moms will maybe come back for Mother's Day. It's
Mother's Day is come and gone.
Come and gone. Maybe next year. Who knows? All right.
Did you call your mom on Mother's Day? Now I'm worried.
Yeah, of course I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I called her today.
Okay, but Mother's Day was the 10th.
I did. Listen, she visited the week before.
The way you said it, you'd be like, I don't know, maybe around Mother's Day we'll have it back on. It's like, motherfucker, that was two weeks
ago. Well, you know, whatever. I tried to pitch Malcast, but I know your mom's going through a lot of stuff in Florida, so.
No, I understand you're trying to pitch Malcast.
Well, we also had a lot going on, you know, Rangers did a lot.
My mom would love to come on. I'm saying it might not be great right now.
Right.
We should try to get my dad back on. Yeah, because Lord knows that's when they're going to trade for Eichel, like mid-podcast.
That's actually a good idea. Let's get that happening. All right, we'll be back next week. You can follow me on Twitter at OrionMead. You can follow Greg at Bluesher's Break. If you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/BluesherzBreakaway makes the show go, makes us continue to be NHL insiders. We'll be back. Love you guys. Bye.